The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Religion News Service and the Associated Press. First of all, an article published by the Associated Press on September 23rd, written by Peter Smith and entitled, National Cathedral Replaces Windows Honoring Confederacy with Stained Glass Homage to Racial Justice, Washington, D.C. The landmark Washington National Cathedral unveiled new stained glass windows on Saturday, September 23, with the theme of racial justice, filling the space that had once held four windows honoring Confederate Generals Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson. The new windows depict a march for justice by African Americans, descendants of the very people who would have remained in slavery after the Civil War if the side for which the officers fought had prevailed. The cathedral had removed the old windows after Confederate symbols featured prominently in recent racist violence. The dedication service was attended by many clergy from the Washington area's historically black churches, as well as leaders of social justice organizations. The prayers, Bible readings, and brief speeches were interspersed with gospel music and spirituals, as well as the contemporary song, Heal Our Land. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, the first black woman to serve on the Supreme Court, read excerpts from the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s Letter from Birmingham Jail, published in 1963. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, she read from King's famed message while jailed in Alabama. The goal of America is freedom. We will win our freedom. A week earlier, she had spoken at the 60th anniversary of Birmingham church bombing that killed four young black girls. The new windows, titled Now and Forever, are based on a design by artist Carrie James Marshall. Stained glass artisan Andrew Goldcool crafted the windows based on that design. In the new work, African Americans are shown marching, on foot or in a wheelchair, from left to right across the four windows. Some march in profile, some directly face the viewer, with signs proclaiming fairness and no foul play. Light floods in through the sky-bright panes of white and blue above the figures. Marshall, who was born in Birmingham in 1955, invited anyone viewing the new windows or other artworks inspired by social justice to imagine oneself as a subject and an author of a never-ending story that is still yet to be told. The setting is particularly significant in the massive neo-Gothic cathedral, which regularly hosts ceremonies tied to major national events. It is filled with iconography depicting the American story in glass, stone, and other media. Images range from presidents to famous cultural figures and state symbols. But the Lee and Jackson windows were telling a story that was not a true story, according to the very Reverend Randolph Marshall Holerith, dean of the cathedral. They were installed in 1953 and donated by the United Daughters of the Confederacy. The windows extolled generals fighting for a cause that sought to enshrine slavery in our country for all time, Holerith said. He added, "You can't call yourself the National Cathedral, a house of prayer for all people, when there are windows in there that are deeply offensive to a large portion of Americans." The cathedral has accompanied the window replacement with a number of public forums discussing the legacy of racism and how monuments were used to burnish the image of the Confederacy as a noble lost cause. The new windows will also be accompanied by a poem written by scholar Elizabeth Alexander, president of the Mellon Foundation. The poem, American Song, will be engraved beneath the windows. A single voice raised, then another, it says. We must tell the truth about our history. Make this portal be where the light comes in. Alexander said in an interview that the poem referred both to the literal light from the windows, which she said beautifully illuminates the surrounding stonework, and the figurative light that enables us to see each other wholly and in community. The setting is important in a sanctuary that is also a communal space, a space that tourists visit, a space where the nation mourns, Alexander said. The story the windows tell is one of collective movement, of progress, of people seeking, struggling, and asserting the values of fairness for all. The old windows removal followed the use of Confederate imagery by the racist gunman who massacred members of a black church in Charleston, South Carolina in 2015, and by marchers at a 2017 far-right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, that ended with a counter-protester's death. The original windows, complete with Confederate battle flags, had depicted Lee and Jackson as saint-like figures, with Lee bathed in rays of heavenly light and Jackson welcomed by trumpets into paradise after his death. Those windows are now stored by the cathedral. The cathedral also is the seat of the Episcopal Church's presiding bishop and Diocese of Washington. The bishop of the diocese, the Right Reverend Marianne Edgar Budd, joined Hollerith in delivering opening remarks at the dedication. Hollerith called the decision to remove the Confederate windows. "They were antithetical to our call to be a house of prayer for all," he said, adding, "There's a lot of work yet to be done." Now an article written by Adele M. Banks and published by the Religion News Service on September 19. Sarah Jake Roberts, pastor, and T.D. Jake's daughter, now Time 100 Next honoree. Sarah Jakes Roberts, a popular conference speaker and pastor, has been named to the Time 100 Next list of up-and-coming leaders. The designation by the Time magazine for Jake Roberts, 35, appeared on newsstands on Friday, September 15, as she was leading a conference that drew 40,000 women to Globe Life Field in the Dallas suburb of Arlington. The Woman Evolve Conference comes after her father, Bishop T.D. Jakes, concluded his Woman Thou Art Loosed events last year, after more than a quarter of a century. "When your father is T.D. Jakes and you follow his footsteps into the world of ministry, there's a lot of pressure to find your own voice," wrote producer and philanthropist Tyler Perry, who has known her for decades, in the Time 100 Next tribute to Jakes Roberts. Now, as co-pastor of the Potter's House churches in L.A. and Denver, that same voice speaks loudly to a generation desperately in need of compassion, teaching, and love. Her lived experience using the grace of prayer to find a way through personal pain and tragedy resonates deeply with so many. Jakes Roberts has risen in popularity after a pregnancy at age 13 initially upended her dreams. She has since developed a podcast and book club and called the honor another layer of healing to an old wound and a full circle moment in a statement on her Instagram account. "In 2001, my dad was on the cover of Time magazine," she wrote. "A year later, I was the pregnant teenager of America's next Billy Graham. I wanted to hide, so I did. I hid in shame, pain, depression, and fear. When I found a flicker of light to clench, it wasn't because I sought to start a ministry or empower others. I just wanted to believe that healing was available to me." Time CEO Jessica Sibley said in the magazine's announcement, "The honorees on Time 100 Next are rising stars whose work and determination is creating a better future." Other Time 100 Next honorees include Oklahoma City Mayor David Holt, a Republican who is known for his support of interfaith relations, and Rami Youssef, the co-creator of Rami, the Hulu series that is considered the first U.S. sitcom about a Muslim family. Our next article from the Religion News Service was published on September 19, written by Megan Salishavili, entitled, Riding a Wave of Converts, One Group Aims to Fuse Orthodoxy with Southern Values. Tobaccoville, North Carolina. Orthodox Christianity in the United States is a kaleidoscope of languages and cultures as diverse as Russia, Greece, Ethiopia, Syria, Bulgaria, and, increasingly, the American South. Aiming to forge that burgeoning Southern Orthodox identity is the Philip Ludwell III Orthodox Fellowship, which kicked off its inaugural conference in the small North Carolina village of Tobaccoville, just northwest of Winston-Salem, on Saturday, September 16, with coffee, muffins, and a welcome table papered with reimagined Southern state flags, each overlaid with a white, three-bar Russian Orthodox cross. Philip Ludwell III, the fellowship's namesake, became one of America's earliest converts to Orthodoxy in 1738, and then translated Russian Orthodox texts into English. His family held government positions in the Carolinas and Virginia, and shared ancestry with Confederate General Robert E. Lee, born nearly a century later. We love Jesus, we honor our ancestors, and we want Orthodoxy to grow in our homeland, said Rebecca Dillingham, a co-founder of the fellowship. It's pretty simple, and that's why the inaugural conference was a success. Doesn't take a PhD to figure that out. Many of the conference attendees and speakers call themselves traditionalist, advocating for young marriages, homeschooling, and trade school over universities. Many also believe monarchy is the best form of government, but begrudgingly accept liberal democracy. They're unhappy with both political parties, but for most, Donald Trump is the favorite option for president. While many jurisdictions were represented, including Antiochian, Serbian, Greek, and Orthodox Church of America, the majority of attendees appeared to represent the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia, commonly called ROKOR, a semi-autonomous part of the Russian Orthodox Church in Moscow. The 125 attendees from at least 10 states at the weekend conference mingled over North Carolina barbecue, listened to speeches, participated in Q&As, and gathered for Saturday evening and Sunday morning worship at Dillingham's Parish down the road. Moore tried to sign up, but the event was capped to comply with the fire code. Dillingham, who organized the conference and was referred to as the Energizer Bunny of the fellowship, also runs the Dissident Mama blog and podcast, where she expresses her self-described unapproved opinions. She wrote anonymously until a hate watch researcher doxed her in 2020. She has argued for the South to secede from the U.S. again, opposed the removal of Confederate statues from public land, and attempted to show parallels between Southern and Russian identity. She has compared what she sees as American authoritarianism imposed on the South to the suffering inflicted by Bolsheviks, and has likened figures such as Lee, wrongly demonized in her opinion, to Russia's President Vladimir Putin. Like almost all of the attendees, Dillingham has no ethnic ties to an Orthodox country, but converted to Orthodoxy years ago after living as an atheist, feminist, and communist hippie, she has explained on her podcast. Evangelicals in particular have been converting to Orthodoxy for decades as English language liturgies have become more common. Then the internet facilitated a constellation of blogs and podcasts about Orthodoxy, which, together with the pandemic lockdowns, has led to explosive growth in some Orthodox parishes, particularly across the South. Historically, Orthodoxy has been concentrated more in Alaska and urban pockets where Slavic, Balkan, and Middle Eastern immigrants have settled. A recent study on the effects of the pandemic on Orthodox parishes in the U.S. found that while most Orthodox churches shrank an average 15% and regular attendees from 2020 to 2022, 1 in 5 parishes grew their membership, and in-person attendance by 20%. Dillingham's Roker Parish in Tobaccoville, St. Thomas the Apostle Orthodox Church, is about 95% converts and has grown to about 80 weekly attendees since its 2019 start, according to her. Members first gathered in a small backyard tool shed, desiring English language Russian Orthodox services that they couldn't find close by. A priest visited every few weeks. The congregation expanded onto the lawn during 2020 lockdowns, attracting worshipers from churches whose doors closed for online-only services. Now they meet in a building they bought from a Methodist church and have a full-time priest. The Reverend John Whiteford, the other co-founder of the fellowship, is a priest in Spring, Texas, at Jonah Russian Orthodox Church, also Roker, which doubled during the pandemic to about 150 weekly attendees, he said. In his address, Whiteford emphasized that Southern culture and American culture are different. The American way is to impose our democracy and make everyone like us. But not everyone wants to be American, he said. The foreign policy of the South generally has been isolationist, but America provokes incidents, starts wars. Whiteford didn't mention the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but has written on his blog why he believes NATO and the United States provoked Russia. In his speech, he also said that American culture's materialism and capitalism are in contrast to the South's past agrarianism. Recently returned from a trip to several Moldovan villages, he made the case for why Orthodox Christians should garden and farm. If we can have land to raise chickens and goats, we should, because kids who grow up around farm animals have the sense to know male and female, he quipped. All of the event's speakers oppose same-sex marriages and argue that its legalization is having negative effects on traditional families. If there is a distinctive American culture, it is Disney, media, consumerism, and sodomy, said Whiteford. Metropolitan Jonah Pufhassan, a retired bishop of Roker and rector of St. Herman of Alaska Orthodox Church in Stafford, Virginia, who was forced to resign from the Orthodox Church in America, in part for comments seen as incendiary, spoke about how the South must combat the radical ideology of the North, which he described as formed by socialism and Marxism and based on hatred of God, religion, art, music, and the traditional family. We have to stand up against this, he said. I don't think standing up in violent revolution is going to do it, but we have to stand up for the truth. Pufhassan also advised that new converts stop arguing about doctrine online, especially in vulgar terms, to show love instead of anger, and to respect non-Orthodox Christian faiths while sharing about orthodoxy. Both Whiteford and Pufhassan are converts to the faith from Protestant backgrounds. Whiteford from the Church of the Nazarene and Pufhassan from Episcopalianism. Notably, few attendees at the conference were cradle Orthodox Christians and clergy who have historically been the preservers of orthodoxy in the U.S. Sarah Riccardi Schwartz, a scholar of orthodoxy in the U.S. and author of Between Heaven and Russia, said she receives a lot of emails from Orthodox Christians who are really concerned about the trajectory of their parishes and believe converts are pulling their churches into right-wing politics, she said. They're worried, and they don't know what to do, Riccardi Schwartz said. My first reaction is talk to your priest. There is no uniform way of receiving converts into the church, and Riccardi Schwartz believes clergy, deacons, and catechist teachers need to do more to educate people who are reading about orthodoxy online, sometimes from sources like Dillingham and Whiteford, whom she considers radicalized. Because orthodoxy is small in the U.S., They think that these Orthodox figures online are helpful because we're getting more converts in, she said. They think we are building American Orthodoxy. No, we're not. We're creating an American Orthodoxy that's not in line with the gospel, but rather with right-wing extremism. These tensions over gender, nationalism, and the impacts of the Russian-Ukraine war reflect the identity battles fragmenting Orthodoxy around the world. The last of our articles today was from the Religion News Service, published on September 18, written by Jana Rice. Allegations against Tim Ballard, Inspiration Behind Sound of Freedom, Explain Rebuke by LDS Church. Late last week, news outlets began reporting that The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints had issued a statement distancing itself from Tim Ballard, the founder of Operation Underground Railroad, which uses quasi-military sting operations to combat the sexual exploitation of children. The organization was celebrated in the recent movie Sound of Freedom. Apparently, Ballard himself found out about the rebuke via a media report rather than through the church. I called my stake president and said, "Do you know about this?" "No, no idea," he told a group of supporters in Boston. "I don't believe the church did this. I truly don't." But as the story unfolded, we get a glimpse of why the church may have wanted to distance itself from Ballard. According to reports in Vice.com, Ballard has been accused of sexual misconduct with at least 7 different women. Sources familiar with the situation said that the self-styled anti-slavery activist, who appears to be preparing for a Senate run, invited women to act as his wife on undercover overseas missions, ostensibly aimed at rescuing victims of sex trafficking. He would then allegedly coerce these women into sharing a bed or showering together, claiming that it was necessary to fool traffickers. Ballard is said to have sent at least one woman a photo of himself in his underwear, festooned with fake tattoos, and to have asked another how far she was willing to go, in the words of a source, to save children. These sources requested anonymity because they fear retaliation. Vice said attempts to contact Ballard or his current organization were unsuccessful, but Operation Underground Railroad told the magazine he had exited the organization in June and that OUR is dedicated to combating sexual abuse and does not tolerate sexual harassment or discrimination by anyone in its organization. Before the news broke, the church in its statement already seemed eager to downplay any relationship between Tim Ballard and M. Russell Ballard, the acting president of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. They are not related, but the church acknowledged that both Ballards had been friends in the past, drawn by mutual interest in caring for children, but said the friendship is very much over. The church's statement cited the unauthorized use of President Ballard's name for Tim Ballard's personal advantage, and also said that Tim Ballard had engaged in behavior that was regarded as morally unacceptable, though it didn't specify what the behavior was. The Vice article explained, perhaps, Ballard's speech to an audience on an American Covenant tour in Boston this weekend, in which, while claiming he had never traded on Elder Ballard's name, he proceeded to trade on Elder Ballard's name. He began his remarks by saying that Elder Ballard has been like a grandfather to him. Over the course of his comments, he also managed to slip in the facts that Elder Ballard had blessed and set apart his son for an LDS mission, and that Elder Ballard had enthusiastically attended the very same heritage tour they were all currently taking. He emphasized that Elder Ballard sought him out. "He asked me to take him on this tour. President M. Russell Ballard asked me to take him on this tour. It wasn't my idea." This was in the same section of the talk where he also said, "I've never used Elder Ballard's name, ever. I've never traded on his name or asked for anything. I've never had any business dealings with him. He's like a grandfather to me. Then he became more aggressive in discrediting Vice.com, which had carried the story of the church's denunciation. Do you know Vice? Do you think the church would make a statement to Vice? He asked his supporters, who responded with derisive laughter. Vice magazine has promoted the concept that pedophiles should be called minor attracted persons to normalize it. Vice magazine has done more hit pieces on the church than maybe any other. I can't imagine that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints would make such a statement to a tabloid. I can't imagine, but I can't confirm it. When in doubt, call your accusers pedophiles or supporters of pedophiles. As a secondary self-defense, claim that any criticism of you is politically motivated. Tim Ballard went there, too. 3 days before that horrible story launched, it was leaked to the press that I was going to run for the U.S. Senate, he said. Do you think that's a coincidence? The problem with Ballard's assertion that this is a liberal hatchet job is that Vice wasn't the only news outlet that apparently received the statement from the church and reported on it. Fox News, which can hardly be dismissed as a leftist rag, ran the story. Utah's KUTV, a CBS affiliate, is also reporting that it received the statement. Tim Ballard returned a couple of times to how devastating the attack has been on his children, who are being harassed right now because everybody believes that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that he's long defended, has turned against him. I've written how many books, made how much money for Desiree Book, he said. Tim Ballard's episodes on the church's official Come Follow Me podcast and All In podcast appear to still be available on Desiree Book's website as of this writing, as well as his many books promoting Christian nationalism and the unique role the Book of Mormon is supposed to have played in the founding of the United States of America. However, Fox News is reporting that the church has removed articles about Ballard from its official website. According to Vice's second article, OUR acknowledged that it has retained an independent law firm to conduct a comprehensive investigation of all relevant allegations about sexual misconduct, but declined to comment further while the investigation is underway. We've run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.